Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm an environmental entrepreneur and founded Green Sense to bring you the real news.
And I'm Bob Kessler, helping with the real news, executive producer. This week, we're going to meet another artist who's using what we often think of as unreusable to bring attention to a big environmental problem. And Robert, what's old is new again. Steel is making a comeback in cars because of certain environmental advantages.
Well, I am very excited to hear all about this, and it's all coming up on this week's edition of Green Sense. Steel has long been the material of choice for car makers. In recent years, aluminum's been on the rise as they try to make cars lighter and more fuel efficient. But with advancements in steelmaking, it now has some new environmental advantages that is making manufacturers reevaluate the use of steel in auto production. We're joined now by David Anderson from the Steel Market Development Institute, or SMDI, to tell us more. Welcome, David.
Yes, thank you, Robert. Hello.
Well, when I think of cars from the 50s or 60s, I think of big, roomy autos made of steel, steel dashboards, steel door handles, steel window cranks. Thick steel bodies, big steel bumpers, and heavy steel engines. Why was steel the metal of choice for car companies?
Yeah, and I think you're right in your assessment, but you also, when you think of those cars of the 50s and 60s and 70s, you think of styling and the fact that they were very distinctive looking when they went down the road. So steels helped enhance that. You could take the steels of those days, they were very formable, and you could get those neat lines and the great styling cues.
Yes, like 58 or 57 Chevys or the old Cadillacs. You're exactly right. When did aluminum start entering the picture?
Yeah, the aluminum, different methods of making aluminum, of course, cast forged aluminum products probably 30, 40 years ago as they started to look at engine blocks and heads and wheels and suspension components. Where we did see a big inroad was on a higher production component or vehicle would be the Audi A8 about 20 years ago in the sheet steel arena.
And why was steel the metal of choice when cars were first being made? Why wasn't it aluminum?
And I'll go back to the fact that steel is a very versatile material. So it has the capability to be very formable. So the body panels, the stuff that you see as a consumer, it could be formed rather easily and put into place. But the structure itself that you might not see that's under the body, it could be alloyed, and using different elements, it could be stronger. So it could help absorb crash or help with your rigidity and the ability to go down the road and not feel all the bumps and bruises.
What are the advantages of using steel when it comes to making cars more sustainable? Because it's no longer just the high miles per gallon that you can get from a car. People are also starting to look at how these cars are manufactured.
No, you're right, Robert. The steels of today are a very sustainable material. So when you talk about the new regulations for CAFE on miles per gallon or greenhouse gas emissions, they talk about the tailpipe only. However, when you look at the entire life cycle from the steel manufacturing to the assembly of the vehicle to the end of life vehicle, steel's got a great story in that it is the lowest emitting material when produced, and then it is the most recycled product at the end of life.
Are they able to make steel lighter?
Yes, in today's world, the advanced high-strength steels that are being developed are being developed such that they have higher strength and good formability, so you can replace some of the mild steels of the past with steels that are thinner, and that gives you a lighter weight steel, and it still performs acceptably in crash and torsional rigidity, so you don't lose any of the performance of the product.
You mentioned the Audi A8, and our friends at Consumer Guide Automotive tell us Audi is using less aluminum in its construction of the A8. As you mentioned, the car 22 years ago touted its use of aluminum for lightness. Now it's using more steel. Tell us what changed, and why did Audi start looking at steel again?
Yes, with the steels that have been developed in the manufacturing processes that you can use, there's one that's called the press hardening. And what that does is give you a very formable product as you press it, but you harden it by quenching it in the die, and you can get very strong, rigid product. And Audi is putting it into the side of the vehicle to help with any side impact concerns. And also, when you use steel versus aluminum, you can have smaller components, and therefore your A pillars and your B pillars are smaller and give you a better observation, so you won't have the same blind spots you might have with an aluminum component.
David, do you think we'll be seeing more steel used over aluminum in more cars in the future?
I would hope that would be true. I know that we recognize through 2025 right now, with the CAFE and greenhouse gas requirements, that lightweighting offers advantages to the automotive manufacturers. So we know there'll be material competition. Hoods look like it could be aluminum, but steel offers some solutions. So I think it'll be a battle. We'll win some, we'll lose some, but we have solutions that are affordable and give great value to the automotive OEM and ultimately to the consumer.
I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is David Anderson with the Steel Market Development Institute, or SMDI. And we're talking about the use of steel in cars and how it's making them more greener. David, has your organization done a total cost analysis and a sustainability analysis of the use of steel versus aluminum and the benefits?
Yes, we have. We routinely complete projects with our customers through the Auto Steel Partnership or directly with the Automotive Applications Council, which is an SMDI group. And it's very important, the performance. We maintain performance when we start to lighten components or lighten structures. The value, of course, is important, so we make sure that we do it at the highest value. And now more important is the sustainability. So we look at the life cycle of the component or the structure and compare steel solutions to alternate solutions with aluminum or even advanced high-strength steel. Is that a more life cycle efficient design and produce less greenhouse gases ultimately?
So what's old is new, and what's new becomes old. Talk a little bit about the economics of steel. What are the advantages of using steel over aluminum for auto production?
In general, steel is a lower cost to manufacture. I don't know if you remember back to your high school physics where steel fits on the periodic table right in the middle. It's easy to work with. I guess that's iron. Iron is easy to work with, where aluminum fits on one of the sides and it's harder to work with. And therefore, it's more energy intensive to work with aluminum than steel. So the value is there because it is less energy intensive, so it costs less to work with. And ultimately, as it goes through the process, it maintains its value versus other materials.
Well, thanks to new technological advancements, there's many kinds of new steel and coating these days. Can you talk about some of the new cool steel products that are now on the market?
Yeah, we talked earlier about the cars of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and back then there might have been 10 different steels that were used in the manufacture of these vehicles. In today's world, the steel industry has met the challenges of lightweighting, making it stronger, safer, the performance requirements, and there's over 200 varieties of steel available for our automotive customers to work with. The way the steels are made nowadays is, besides the chemical additions and alloying additions, it's also thermomechanical processing, so it works on changing the microstructure. So that's where we get the dual phase steels, where we have martensite and ferrite, or the complex phase, or just 100% martensite steels. So there are many different advanced high strength steels available to the auto designers and manufacturers today.
Well, and I also remember, I'm dating myself, but a lot of times you'd buy a new car and they'd sell different coating products for the steel. These days you don't hear about that. So talk a little bit about coatings and how that's changed the steel industry.
Yes, again, back to those 50s, 60s, and 70s, it wasn't unusual to have rust problems. And therefore, coating manufacturers were out there to spray coating on to help control some of the corrosion concerns. In today's world, the steel manufacturers have stepped up and provide galvanized coated, where it's a zinc-rich coating on top of the steel itself, and it helps protect against corrosion. So if there's even a nick in the coating, it's sacrificial, so it will help cover up that and avoid any corrosion concerns in the future.
Well, as a kid growing up in Chicago, the bottom of Lake Michigan was always filled with, you know, large steel complexes. And anytime you went around that area on Interstate 94, you had to close your eyes, roll up the windows, because it was polluted. You could barely breathe or even see in that musty air. Modern steel making's been around since the 17th century. Talk about some of the most recent technological developments that made the steel industry cleaner and greener, because now you pass steel plants and see very little emissions coming out of them.
Yes, you're right. From those days to today, the industry has really dramatically reduced the amount of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's air. They've reduced the amount of water. They process the water from Lake Michigan and actually improve it versus what they receive in. And part of that is due to the technological advances in steelmaking, where in the past we might have melted the steel and poured it into ingots and then had to reheat those ingots to get to slabs. Now we take the steel and continuously cast it into slabs, or in some places thin slabs, or in other places sheet steel, all the way from molten steel to the final product. So by doing that, you eliminate a couple steps in the operation, and those steps in the past would put more pollutants or require more energy and put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere.
That's David Anderson with Steel Market Development Institute, or SMDI, joining us on GreenSense. I'm Robert Colangelo with a reminder that you can subscribe to the GreenSense radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you. GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Art can be a positive way to draw attention to an issue. One of those issues that has gotten a lot of attention recently is the global marine crisis. And artist Angela Hazelden Pozzi is here to tell us more about this. Hi, Angela.
Hi there.
For the past 6 years, your project Wash Ashore has processed tons of plastic from Pacific beaches to create monumental art to awaken the hearts and minds of people to this problem. For those who are listening and who haven't seen your sculptures, how do you, their creator, best describe them?
Well, they are giant representations of the sea life that's threatened by the plastic pollution issue in our oceans and waterways. So things like a 9-foot-tall penguin or a 16-foot-long parrotfish are all constructed out of either hand-selected and drilled and stitched little pieces of plastic pollution, garbage, or they are put together in larger sections that you can actually recognize objects, but they're all very well planned out with color schemes.
What was most impressive to me was how brightly colored these works of art are. Do you color them, or does that come from the plastic you pick up?
Well, I like to tell people that plastic comes in every color and every shape and every form and every item that we could ever want as human beings. And that's why we have the plastic pollution problem, is that we are seduced as consumers by this material that's bright and colorful and pretty and wonderful, but it lasts forever. And so we don't have to color anything. We just simply save it and sort it by color and size and shape, and save things so that we get enough of a certain color to be able to do things for our sculptures.
A lot of this work is big, and a lot of it seems to be very labor intensive. As you said, you stitch some of this together. What is the process of creating it?
Well, it is extremely labor intensive. And I'm the lead artist and artistic director of a nonprofit, Washed Ashore. So we work with thousands of volunteers and school kids and all sorts of people who simply come by our workshop in our small little town of Bandon, Oregon, and put in an hour or two or maybe just 5 minutes helping us do things to move the process along. So basically, people just go to the beaches and pick up garbage and drop it off at our facility where we wash it and prep it, scrub it, rinse it, sort it. And then we sometimes have to cut it into smaller pieces and then bring it into our big workshop area where people, we have an open workshop where people could come in, just drop in anytime. And there's always something for someone to do to help with a sculpture. If it's, making a little tiny piece or, sorting things or, drilling something or cutting something. And then all those small parts of the sculpture come back to the sculpture building facility where myself and my art assistants and apprentices work with me to put all those pieces together like a big puzzle. And then I do the finish work and the heads and some of the personalities that you might see online. But it's a long process.
From start to finish, how long is that process?
Well, it can be years. It can be months. It depends. It's basically like mining your art supplies. So, we do commission work for people. So sometimes we like to allow 6 months, but it's pretty hard to put a timeline on. There's some pieces of plastic that I've had, saved for 5 years, and and some animals that I have to find the right parts for, so I just sort of accumulate that over a period of time. So, you know, it's a tough thing to put a timeline on, but
say that it takes months to years to get these done. I've got to mention that Bandon, Oregon is one of my favorite places. Those who have not seen it, it's just a wonderful, rugged, unspoiled coastline. So I can see where you can become very artistic there. Were you always doing art? And how did you come up with this idea?
Well, I was extremely fortunate and kind of realized it at a young age. I was raised by a couple of artists. My father was an arts administrator and museum director, and my mom was a professional artist. So I always had a studio and was always making things and always scrounging things. And then I became an art teacher. So for about 30 years, I was a practicing art teacher at every level. And so also led community art projects. So I kind of had some good qualifications to get me started in this. But basically, I came up with the idea because I just really was sickened to my stomach when I was seeing the beautiful beaches of Oregon, which I'd loved all my life and visited at my grandparents' house, were becoming polluted and couldn't figure out what was going on, and realizing it's just coming from the middle of the ocean and it's a worldwide problem. And I thought, I just lost my first husband to a brain tumor and was trying to figure out what to do with my life because I was pretty devastated. And I thought, well, if I could save the ocean, that'd be a good reason to live and a good thing to do with one's life and with what I've got left. And just need to get a lot of people to help me because that's a pretty big big thing to chew off. So let's see if we could just get the whole community of where I live and everybody who already cares about the ocean, just keep them, get it going. And so we basically have four traveling exhibits now that tour the country, and we have made about 70 works of art out of about 21 tons of garbage so far.
My guest is artist Angela Hazeltine Pozzi, and we're talking about her art as a solution to raise awareness to the Great Pacific Garbage Patch issue and all the plastic that's in the ocean. That's pretty deep why you went into this, and I've read in a number of books that when you're feeling depressed, there's certain chemicals that are created, and the best way to get rid of those chemicals are to help other people and do good things. So hopefully this was very therapeutic for you when you asked.
No, it's really true. And it really defines something bigger than yourself. And I often tell people I came to the ocean to heal and found an ocean that needed healing and decided to save it. So that's kind of what happened. I mean, it's like I found something bigger than me that needed help. And I really have. My heart has healed, and I remarried to a wonderful man 5 years now. We've been married. So, when you're doing work that comes from the heart, your heart heals and is able to move on. And I think that's a good lesson for all of us.
In addition to the fact that there's a tremendously large problem with plastic pollution in our oceans, what do you want to impart to the people with this art?
Well, you know, it's an interesting message that we really depend on promoting, and that is that the plastic pollution issue is a rather terrifying and depressing topic, and it is very real, and we often include facts and whole educational components to our exhibits. But at the same time, we also have to tell people these are all things that you buy. This is all purchased. Everything on our sculptures was once purchased by someone and then discarded. And that is powerful information for us to remember, is that we have the power through our purchases to determine what is made in the world. And it's supply and demand. If we demand more biodegradable products and we purchase more, and we look and support alternatives to plastics, they will be created. So consumers have a lot of power, and you know, that's something we want people to be aware of, that I don't think people even realize how much garbage is coming in on our shores all over the world, and it's just not going to go away because it lasts forever. So
are you getting through to people that there's a plastic pollution crisis through Europe?
Oh, yeah. 7 years ago when I started the project, there were not as many discussions or as many innovations or as many inventions happening as there are now. And really, and we were asked by the U.S. State Department last year to bring 9 sculptures to the Our Ocean Conference to meet with world leaders. We were at the United Nations this year in New York City for the UN Ocean Conference. And, you know, people get it. The power of the arts are strong, and if they're well used, they can reach across cultures and across socioeconomic levels and can get the message to the heart. And it's working, and that's what keeps us going, because it's a lot of hard work.
Oh, yes.
We're getting very good response, yeah.
Well, once you've solved the plastic pollution problem, what's next for you?
I love it. That's real optimism for you. I think that I'll have a lifetime job here. I mean, I'd love to be put out of business by not having any more so-called art supplies washing up on our beaches. But, you know, that's it. I think the one thing that this project does that is also really powerful that can reach across the plastic pollution issue is that it proves that many people working together can make big, amazing things happen. And all these sculptures are made with thousands of hands helping, and it's not something one person can do. And that's a message humanity needs to realize, is that we've got to all work together and, you know, contribute our small parts to create big things to change.
That's Angela Hazelton-Potsy with Washed Ashore, which you can see at the Riemann Gardens in Ames, Iowa, Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium in Tacoma, Washington, the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History, and the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Support our Podbean patron drive when you visit the Green Sense Farm website. And it's your contribution that supports independent media like us, and it pays for quality programming so we can continue to bring you great guests. Bob, what are we going to learn next week?
Well, you know, Robert, the efforts to go green are happening the most in the cities across America, and we're going to find out this new list of just who are the greenest cities in the U.S. and what got them there.
Visit GreenSenseFarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you could also check out the list of radio stations that air our show. Keep learning, stay fresh, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com and watch us grow.